Continuing some of our contemporary kashrus issues, so I thought we'd talk about a topic that really takes up a significant amount of time in kashrus, particularly in the realm of catering and restaurants, and something that you have to be aware of in your own house as well, and that's the subject of bugs in food. It doesn't sound like the most appetizing topic, but it is a very, very potentially a loaded kashrus concern. And of course, we know the Torah tells us in Parsha Shmini that one is not permitted to eat any kinds of insects, whether creepy crawlies, whether flying, whether floating, swimming, no matter what the bugs do, you're not allowed to eat them. Bottom line is, that's considered to be a very, very serious halakhic problem. So it goes without saying, I don't think anyone here has a tremendous authority to do so, but it goes without saying that to actively eat a bug is, of course, out of the question. Last year, I was in Florida for a couple of days, and one of my kids, we were visiting the Florida State Fair. I don't know if everyone's ever been there. So it was a whole booth at the Florida State Fair, all about these delicious delicacies of chocolate-covered bugs and honey-glazed beetles and every other things. And I was sitting there watching people walk by and just taking them, munching and crunching. And I just couldn't hold back my baruch lokeinu shebrach l'chvodo v'yilam ratzon v'yilam semes. Okay, the Gemara says that a person is supposed to say that I really, really want, I would love to eat that cheeseburger, I'd love to eat that tray of food, but Kadosh Baruch said not to. I had a lot of trouble saying that at that particular booth. I really did not have that tremendous time to eat some of those creepy crawlies. So, bottom line is like this. Obviously, to eat one of these on its own would clearly be awesome, but there are multiple levels. Question becomes, what if I have a food that there may be a potential, maybe a concern, it may have some bugs in it, and I don't see them, I'm not really sure, I don't know. Do I have to be concerned that any given food may be infested or not? So this is a whole sugya, Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, a whole discussion about this. It's called in Shulchan Aruch, it was taloy, but talas literally means a worm, but it doesn't only mean worms, any kinds of bugs. Do we have to be concerned that any given food is infested or not? So here the halacha tells us as follows, that we have a general principle in halacha that's called following rov. We rely on the majority. Now, the truth to be told, we rely on majority in so many areas of halacha, particularly in the realm of kashrus. I'll give you one or two examples of just so how much we rely on majority, even though we don't know with certainty something, but we have the right to rely on the rov. The following shaila: who here had milk for breakfast this morning? Who here had Dunkin' Donuts, which have milk inside them? Who had any milk and any dairy product whatsoever? Okay, I see a lot of hands. I haven't yet eaten breakfast yet. Okay, so I can't answer the question in the affirmative, but I have had milk in my lifetime. So I'm going to challenge you with the following question. How in the world do you have a right to drink milk? Maybe the animal, the cow that milk came from, had a hole in its heart. Maybe it had a hole in its stomach. Maybe it had a hole in its brain. What am I getting at? What would that be called? That would be called a trefa. If that animal was a trefa, so then any milk that came out of that animal would be what's called a chol v'yotzim in a trefa, which is also in a Torah. So how did you know? Oh, I see a container of milk right there. I don't care whether it says chol v'yisrael on it. How do you know that it doesn't have a hole? What's the answer?
It's FDA approved.
Nobody in the FDA is checking, is giving ultrasounds to the animals to make sure there are no holes in the stomachs. Every once in a while, there really is one. Halavai, the FDA will be doing that. Yeah.
The rove of cows are not.
So the answer is that most animals, that's why the FDA relies on rove also, most animals are not walking around with holes in their hearts and holes in their stomachs and holes in their brains, etc. Most. I didn't say there aren't any out there. There probably are, once in a blue moon, one that is. But again, we follow rove. And therefore, the rove is that the milk is probably kosher. We can breathe a sigh of relief. Anyone know another application, a similar area, also related to chos trefos? Anyone here has eaten any meat recently? Anyone had chol yesterday? Okay. Anyone had meat yesterday? Wait a second. When they shechted that meat, what do you think the shochet did after he shechted? You think he opened up the animal from head to toe and checked? Any holes in brains? Check. Any holes in hearts? Any checking and tested it? No. Now, there's a whole third parak of Maseches Chulin called Eil Treifas that teaches us if any of those major organs have problems, the animal is a treifa, and the eating of that meat is an isadiraisa. So the halacha does not require to check. Why not? Once again, what's the same story? Rove. Rove, behemos, einam, treifas. We finish. Somebody went told me a story that somebody called up a certain kashrus organization, and the person who called wasn't really aware of halacha, but he just thought he was like very frum. So he called the kashrus organization and he asked them, he said, do you guys make it, are you lenient to rely on rove? Everybody relies on rove. You can't live your life if you don't rely on rove. So you're allowed to eat meat, and you're allowed to drink milk, and you're allowed to do all these things based on the principle of rove. However, Come to Rishon, explain to us, based on certain statements of Chazal, that even though we don't open up an animal and inspect it from head to toe, there is one part of the animal that we do inspect. Anyone knows which one? Which part?
The neck.
The lungs. We open up the lungs of an animal and we make sure that there are no problems. What are we looking for? We're looking for possible holes. We're looking for what's called the sircha. Sircha is like a...
Extra tissue?
A lesion or something, like a little something that could potentially be indicative of possibly either a hole that's there or a hole that's in the process of developing. Certain things that could potentially disqualify an animal from eating it. So we do open up an animal and check the lungs. Why do we do that? I just gave you a whole story to say that we don't bother checking the brains and stomach, intestines, hearts, etc. because we rely on rov. Most animals don't have the lesions. Most animals don't have sirchas. Most animals don't have problems in the lungs either. So manishtana, why are we checking for problems in the lungs? Anyone know the answer to that question?
It's more likely.
Anybody know what that calls in halacha? There's a halachic term for that, a more likely possibility. It's not a probability, it's not a rov. It's what's called the miurha matsui. It's found, it's around, it comes once in a while. It's more likely than a hole in the intestine. A hole in the intestine is very, very unlikely. A hole in the lung or a lesion in the lung, a sirch in the lung, is more likely. It's called the miurha matsui. The halacha requires that even though we follow rov, but we still have to check for miur hamotzui. There's a big question, is that a din derais, a din rabbanan? To get beyond the scope right now, but there is a din, there is a halacha that we are required, and that's what we do, arayam hazeh, halacha lemaisa. We check for what's called miur hamotzui.
If the shochet could tell that there may be something.
Oh, the shochet, let's say the shech opens up the animal, he shechs the animal, then he sees right away something's fishy here, then he has to start to check. Right. Excellent. So there is, on the one hand, the principle you follow rov, and the other hand is the principle you have to be choshesh from yiram motzi. Those two principles actually play out in all areas of halacha. I'll give you another area, another duduchos kashrus. Let's say duduchos shatnes. Is a person required to check any given suit for shatnes? So the answer to the question is, depends what the numbers are. If there's an overwhelming rov in the majority, let's say 99.9% of the suits that came from this place don't have shatnes in them, then technically speaking, one is not required to check. However, if there's a miur hamotzoi, then you are required to be concerned. Now, of course, the million-dollar question is, well, how motzoi is miur hamotzoi? Just how common must the problem be for it to require us to actually check and do the extra due diligence to make sure there's no problem? So there is one of the Gedolei Acharonim, the Mishkenos Yaakov, Mishkenos Yaakov writes in the Tshuva that the magic number is 1 in 10. A 10% concern. So if 10% of animals have problems in their lungs, we have to be concerned with that. If 10% of suits coming from this particular place have shatnes problems, we have to worry about that. If the numbers are beneath the point of 10%, then we need not be worried. So those rules carry over to our sugya of toloi with bugs infestation as well. If I have any given item, any given food that has a possibility that may be some bugs in there that I didn't notice right away, but if I start to take it apart, I'll notice those bugs. So it depends, what are the odds of that happening? Some fruits and vegetables are so clean of bugs, they never, ever, ever have a problem. I mean, never, ever, ever. Ones that are really, really blue moons. Let's say, I'll give you just for argument's sake, let's say a person wants to eat a carrot. So carrots, to the best of my knowledge, don't have a very high infestation rate. And therefore, a person eats a carrot, can eat a raw carrot. You're not obligated to start opening it up and checking your bug, putting up the light box and holding up the light and figuring out what to do with it. You're not mukhlif to do that. Well, let's say, for example, a person wants to eat a banana. So you're not obligated to start opening up your banana and cutting it into pieces and looking and holding it up to the sun and seeing, yeah, bug, no bug, yeah. We assume that it's possible that maybe one in every 10,000 bananas may have a bug sitting inside it, but it's so unlikely that the halacha doesn't require one to check. So again, if you have certain kinds of fruits and vegetables that have reached the point where it's not even a miur hamotzoi, in the same way we can feel comfortable eating meat without checking for the hearts and intestines and brains, etc. The same way we can drink milk and not too worried about what potentially is wrong with the milk. So too, we can eat fruits and vegetables, not too worried about what the potential of a very, very low level of infestation is. However, what if the numbers are higher? What if the numbers are so high that there's even a 10% chance there may be a bug here? So then the halacha is very different. Then the halacha tells us, then you have to check. Then you have to look and you have to investigate and see. Now, as you could probably well guess, it's a very, very hard call to say, is it a miur hamotzoi, is it not a miur hamotzoi? What does that mean? How do you know? Are all vegetables the same? Maybe vegetables coming from this field, coming from this area, from this company. It becomes a very, very gray area as to how exactly are you mishayer this? How do you evaluate this? How do you figure out, is this a kind of a vegetable that has to be checked? or is this a kind of vegetable that doesn't have to be checked? So in many kashrus organizations, so they have people who try to work on this and try to figure out, and again, sometimes you can have different opinions about this. Maybe some rabbanim may come to the opinion that says, oh, this particular vegetable is so low, the odds are so low, and therefore there's nothing to worry about. And there are others who say, no, the odds are a little bit higher, and then there is something that has to be worried about. So those are pretty much the criteria that we're trying to use to figure out whether we have to check for any given vegetable or not. But now we have a whole other layer of question. Let's say, for example, we would assume that there may be a problem in this particular vegetable. It's possible, let's say, for argument's sake, this broccoli, that, let's say, again, I'm just throwing out numbers, 20% of the broccoli do have problems with bugs in them, so we really shouldn't be eating this broccoli without checking it. But what if I want to do as follows? What if I want to take this broccoli and I want to make myself a broccoli kugel or something out of it, and I'm not going to be able to see the bug? Even if there is a bug in there, it's going to be lost. It's going to be bottled, but what? Who knows? What's the magic number?
Shishim.
Bottled by a row, bottled by shishim, right? It's going to be 60 times a row, whatever the number is. It's going to be bottled by elef alfi alofa. There's going to be so many times over of dovra mutter. So if anyone's been learning with Sekhet Chulin, they may have bumped into this principle already about bittel. Let's say, for example, I'm cooking a big pot of potato soup and a little bit of chaza gets in. So if it's a very, very insignificant amount, it's botel. Sometimes these are botel berov in majority. Sometimes they're botel b'shishim. Sometimes other numbers. So over here, the bugs are pretty small. I mean, we're not talking about a major lizard inside my piece of broccoli. So you're talking about a little tiny, tiny, tiny little bug that's barely visible. So that little bug is going to be botel, the elef alfi alofim. So that sounds like, what's the big deal? So even if there is a bug there, it's still going to be okay. Not so simple. Anyone know why not so simple? There's a very, very potentially serious problem with applying bittel to bugs. Anyone know why? What that's called? There's a principle called beria. Anyone ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah,
some people may pronounce it a bria, but a beria. It's a whole unit. It's a whole creature. It's a whole living item, right? So whenever you have a beria in halacha, you have a whole unit in and of itself, that raises a red flag in terms of bittel for the following reason. Bittel means that it's insignificant, it's not important, we just can ignore it. But it's hard to ignore something that's a whole unit, it's a whole creepy crawly with legs and wings, they got the whole nine yards. It's alive and well, or not too well, hopefully not too well in your broccoli. And the question is, can we really apply bittel? So the simple pshat in the Shulchan Aruch is that no, that the entire principle of bittel breaks down when you're dealing with something that's a barrier. So now we have almost like a two-pronged problem. We have problem number one is we have to determine, do we have to even be concerned that there's a bug here in the first place? And the answer is, well, it depends. Depends what the potential, what the odds are. If the odds are, overwhelming odds, that it's not here in the first place, so then we don't have to be worried about it. We don't even have to bother checking. But if there is a good chance, and again, good doesn't mean that good, it means one out of 10 chances that there may be a bug in this broccoli, there may be a bug in this cauliflower, there may be a bug in this lettuce, though if those numbers are correct, then I cannot close my eyes and say, well, I don't have to look for it, I don't have to worry about it. No, I have to look for it. And if I don't look for it, even though now I can't really find it because it's quote-unquote batel, not so simple, not so fast. Maybe it's not batel. It's probably not batel because it's what's called a beria, and a beria would be a problem. Unless, and again, this may be, it's a good thing we're not eating breakfast literally while we're talking because this would probably get a little grotesque, but what if it's no longer a beria? What if I had a bug, and let's say I even know there was a bug here, and it got mixed up into this big, big pot of broccoli soup, and it's not a beria anymore. Why is it not a beria anymore? Because a beria is only true when it's a what? When it's a whole unit that has been broken down. What if it's already been broken down? How did it get broken down? Well, I threw this broccoli into a food processor or something. So in the process of making the broccoli soup, it probably broke the beria. So I have bug in this. I didn't say a bug. I have parts of bugs inside this broccoli soup. So believe it or not, me'ikra din is probably okay. Because again, even though I know for a fact there was bug in here, I know there was a dover that was strafed here, but a broken up beria is no worse than a piece of chazer that got mixed in and can't be discernible anymore either. So in theory, that would be okay. So in theory, if I have a bug, if the bug is intact, nothing has happened to the bug, then I have a big problem. Then I have a barrier problem. It's not buffalo, and I got a huge problem in my hands. If the bug has already been smashed up, so then presumably I don't have a problem anymore.
We call the logic for the amount of, like, the probability of checking something, then how come we always check ahead for blood?
Oh, very good. Excellent, excellent. Very good. So the truth is that in the olden days, eggs had a significant amount of blood spots in them. The reason why you almost never find the blood spot in your eggs is because the eggs in America are already pre-checked, already pre-screened. So the truth is that B'ikra din, you probably don't even have to check them anymore. Because in Europe, they really, really had to be checked. In America, people still check their eggs. Some eggs do have to be checked. There's some eggs, like organic eggs, eggs we have, you know, with the roosters are running all over the place, so then those kinds of eggs would have to be checked. But many of the eggs are already pre-screened in America. That's why the numbers are so much lower. Yeah.
If you have a bug on something, can you just wash it off?
Very good. Excellent question. Very good. Let's say you really do have a bug on something. I have my pot of chicken soup, and I look, oh my goodness, there's a fly in the chicken soup. Now, what do you do? So normally, if you have something that's trafe inside a big pot of food, well, you have a big problem because some of the tom, some of the taste of that trafus is going into the food, and you have to reckon, is it bottom, bottom of a rov, bottom of a shishim? I don't know which part, the boys are learning which part, can hold on.
Okay.
So those who learn kolabosa may have bumped into some of this stuff, probably not as much, but it's more a little bit more the seventh part kind of things. So basically, the halachas are: if you have a little bit of tray for food mixed into a big pot, so that's a potential recipe for disaster because unless it's going to be bottled in a certain amount, it's going to be a problem. So here, a very, very good question: a bug, I can't eat the bug itself. But any taste that the bug emits that goes into the pot can be ignored because that's what's called in halacha no sein tam. Anyone know the phrase? No sein tam lefgam. It tastes pretty bad. We haven't tasted bugs recently, but we're assuming that whatever comes out of the fly and out of the mosquitoes and out of the ants, out of the bees, probably doesn't taste all that good. So if you can get out the bug itself, then the rest of the food can be salvaged. I'm not saying you're going to want to salvage it, but if you could, then it would be okay. All right? So if you can get off, right, if you can get rid of the bug, then it's fine, right. The only problem is that if you have multiple bugs in that lettuce, then you have what's called mukhsak betaloyim. If you have, let's say, a particular dish, and I see three bugs in that dish, then you have to assume that that dish is absolutely infested, unless you can prove otherwise, then whether you want to bother taking the time and the effort to prove otherwise. So once you start to see a problem, that would become a very serious problem. So again, as you can already begin to see, that the issue of taloyim, the issues of bugs, is going to become a very, very complicated challenge, especially when we're dealing with so much food, so many fruits, so many vegetables, so many beans, so many different kinds of items that are potentially infested with bugs. We're dealing with potential really, really serious cashier's concerns. So the few things that we have to be aware of are as follows. So number one, we have to first determine, is this given species, this given food that we're talking about, this given fruit, this given vegetable, is this something that has to be checked in the first place? Can we just say, this is a banana, this is a carrot, this is a potato, this is an apple, these are things that are generally not infested, and therefore we don't have to be worried about it. And even if once in a blue moon something shows up in one of these things, we can just ignore it. But do I say no, that this is something that's really, really potentially problematic and it must be checked? Now, assuming that it must be checked, if a person, for whatever reason, didn't check it, and then it got into a big mixture, that may still be a problem because of the halachas of beria, unless it was actually broken up in the process. But if it wasn't broken up in the process, and I really have a problem, then I really have to check. And if I don't check it, then I have a problem in terms of eating the food. So what would that mean exactly, checking? How would I even go about doing that? So the answer is that it depends on what the food is. Some foods can be checked a little bit lesser serious. Some have to be checked a little bit more rigorous. Again, a lot of this is a throwback to just what the numbers were, what the proportions were. So we're not going to have a hands-on class about how to... We don't have the equipment here in front of us right now. But the basic rules are, once the item has been determined that it has to be checked, then you have to follow pretty much what the rules are. Different hashkachas will give you, in terms of soapy water, looking, holding up the light, things of that nature, to be able to check. Many people like to almost avoid a lot of these kinds of things. A lot of these things are very complicated, and to try to figure out, does this have to be checked? Not checked. Check properly, not check properly. So Baruch Hashem, there is an entire industry out there that has basically done all the work for you. Of course, whenever you have these kinds of solutions, they always cost money. That is the reality. So there is an entire industry out there that has developed over the last 30 years or so, which was started by a company called Bodake and then covered over by many, many others who followed Bodake's rules and many slightly different guidelines. And if you go into any Frum store, the Hamishah supermarket, so you'll see the pre-checked vegetables, the frozen broccoli that has a big OU on it and says, need not be checked. And you see the big bags of lettuce that say, need not be checked. And you see the big cauliflowers and everything, and the strawberry, whatever you want. Depends if you go to a good, well-stocked store. So you see all these kinds of fruits and vegetables and beans and assorted foods that have already been determined to be bug-free. So again, I don't want to impose anyone's standards on anybody's parents, but it's something to look into when a person sets up their own house at a later point in life. So a person should try to figure out that sometimes it's worth it to go down that route. Again, it's an expensive route, so you have to talk with your particular rav and your posek about what to do, but it avoids a lot of these kinds of shilas that we're talking about. It avoids some of the time and effort to make sure things are being checked and being evaluated properly. So again, it's an important area of halacha. It's something that as you get older and you start to set up your own homes, so you have to determine what exactly a policy is going to be about certain kinds of these things. But it's an important area of halacha, and it's an area that, again, in the realm of catering, hashgacha business, and restaurants, so it's something that takes up a lot of time in terms of making sure that the food is clean halachically of any potential concerns of bugs. And again, some of the alumnus that we spoke about in terms of robes and meals and things of that nature. So all that stuff kind of goes into the picture. There's another interesting related, which really touched on other areas of halacha as well, about some bugs are very, 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 very small. And the question is, I can't really even see that bug. So if it really cannot be seen to the naked eye, then it doesn't exist. Then halachically it doesn't. You don't have to take a microscope to find it. But some bugs can be seen to the naked eye if you look close enough. So that also becomes very, very tricky. What is a bug? What's not a bug? Again, it's a whole other world out there. So a lot of this goes into this discussion. So again, there are some things have to be checked, some things don't have to be checked, and there are different ways of checking things. So again, as you get older and you set up your own houses, so it's determined with your own rabbanim as to what your policy is going to be about this important area of those guys. Okay. Yeah, yeah.